House Resources comes to order. It's Wednesday, February 20th. Currently present are Representatives Kawasaki, Representative Roses, Golf Pro Representative Wilson. Co-chairs. Johnson and Gatto, and also we have Representative Edgman. I know that Representative Guttenberg will not be present today. So we have before us but a single bill, and that is sale of raw milk products, House Bill 367 by Representative Newman. Representative Newman, would you mind coming up there, taking the podium, and convincing us of something?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Increase my stature in the world here.
Well, you've already got a political cartoon. How do you do any better than that?
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Can you hear me okay? This, quite simply, addresses a concern.
Could I make a suggestion?
Certainly.
That word simply is just such a killer. I'm going to strike simply out of that.
Mr. Chair, I did not say this is a simple bill. We all know that is no such thing as a simple bill. But what this does is addresses a concern in Alaska, and it's somewhat of a commerce type of a piece of legislation, and it kind of has some overlap. And currently the dairy industry in the state has suffered some pretty significant blows. I am very, very glad to report that I believe on around March 17th, I have talked to Kyle Buse, who has the new processing plant, that he will be able to start taking milk in. So I don't think this is, you know, this is not to really affect the large milk producers in the state. But this is for the people who possibly want to start a herd and get into dairy industry in this state. And you have to start small because it's an expensive proposition to get into a grade A farm. So if you wanted to have three or four, even maybe up to five cows, where you could do that, and I think that's going to limit itself out as to where you can just actually do this on your own and whether it has to go commercial. And so, you know, that it kind of affects those, but it also affects a lot of people in the state who have goats. In that type of a milk product too, where, you know, with the sale of goat milk, and I think we're going to have some people testify as to the qualities of that milk, and it's my understanding that if you're lactose intolerant, that you can maybe consume goat's milk, or you can substitute for breastfeeding with goat's milk. And Mr. Chair and members, there's been a large trend all across America and in Alaska for people wanting to get more into a naturally produced product. And this would allow people to make that choice for themselves. Certainly, if you want to purchase, it's my feeling, and that's why I've introduced this bill, if you would like to go purchase unprocessed milk from a dairy farmer, whether it's a goats or cows or I just understood somebody told me that they were doing moose milk somewhere. But if you want to process a milk product from a farmer, that should be a relationship between you and the farmer.
I have to ask you, Representative Newman, if that would even be legal.
I think that was in Minnesota, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not in the state of Alaska. But there again goes it goes to the relationship between a consumer and a person who has a product for sale, and that's just where we're trying to get at to here. And you know, there's some pretty high value products out there now with goat's milk, and countries that have been doing this for years, in you know, certainly France is known for its goat's milk, and other countries like that, Italy. And what they're doing, I believe it's 20 other states now have moved towards this again. And, you know, a little bit more on the value of this and how it's growing. Just in the state of Alaska, it's my understanding that the farmers markets just in the valley have gone from about a $1 million to a $4 million endeavor or in sales here in just the last 3 years. And it's just an indication of people want to have a more pure product to consume. And, you know, I think that they should have that right to do that. And this will be labeled, all this milk product will be labeled. Currently, I believe what happens, too, is people label this for animal consumption and take it home and drink it themselves. There's other ways that they're purchasing raw milk now. And we're just trying to bring everything in line. And we can answer a lot of questions. I think it pretty much says it all when you go to, you know, House Bill 367 adds a new section. And you can see on Section 2 there, everything else is pretty much in statute except for starting on page 2, lines 28. And then it starts talking about the sale of raw milk and what that means. It's non-pasteurized milk. And we've got descriptions of what pasteurizing and homogenizing is. It's ways to process milk. And there's probably people that are more informed on it, just exactly what that means. I could read a short paragraph if you'd like for the record, Mr. Chair. That's up to you as to what we're talking about. It goes all the way back to process of Louis Pasteur with pasteurization, where they bring milk up to a specific heat for a specific time, I believe, and it's meant to try and make sure that there's no adverse situations or no diseases, chemicals, whatever the case may be in there. But certainly people have been drinking processed milk for a long, long time in history. And people would like that opportunity, and I feel that it should be their choice. And that's where we're trying to get on this bill, Mr. Chair. We'll certainly be glad to answer any questions. I think there's going to be some extensive public testimony on this. So if I may, just to realize that the committee does have limited time, if you'd like to go to any, I don't want to tell you how to do your committee, Mr. Chair, but we'll answer questions that you got, and then I'll come back after public comment if you have more questions. And we'll move on.
Have a question. And nowhere in here do I see that it is refers to cow milk. So this bill would incorporate every mammal. Is it intended to be limited?
Mr. Chair, no, this is not intended to be limited to cow's milk. And I think as far as Alaska goes, you know, the larger producers are probably going to be selling to a commercial market here shortly within the next couple of weeks. So, again, this is meant to the smaller farmers, and I think that's what we're trying to really target is the small guy.
It's meant for smaller farmers, but it doesn't limit itself. The bill is fairly encompassing to include even sales to grocery stores, food chains, etc.
Mr. Chair, we put that in there. There's several, at the request of several stores that sell natural foods, they would like to do that and use it as a marketing tool. And if they were to sell that type of a milk in a restaurant, per se, there would have to be some type of an indication, such as an asterisk, where, you know, it would go back and talk about, again, some requirements that we did put in the bill that does have to prominently state that there may be some health risks associated with this, according to certain industries. And we do have a very extensive packet that was brought forth by some very intelligent people that have been working on this for a long time, with the Weston Price Foundation, which is working to try and get more of these products across the state. And literally, you know, when I asked our state vet to give me his concerns, what they may have on this, Mr. Chair, and I'm sure he'll be here to talk to you, we got a list of those concerns, and I don't know if you've got this in your packet, but it's about 3/4 of an inch thick, that addresses each one of those concerns date by date. And when it talks about some of those illnesses that may have been caused, and that's the critical issue here, is may have been caused. And it's a lot of times it's what we all face, I think, on our day-to-day beings of legislators, where a lot of times we get hit with something, and I know the chair brought an example up to me, you know, where you just kind of get, you know, a lot sometimes media comes out with something that may have happened, but when they find out that really that wasn't the cause, you don't hear about that. You know, it's not the sensationalized part of it, but literally it goes down every report of any disease that's been reported. We have information that goes back and talks about the investigation, how the investigation was done, and tries to identify the real causes, and I don't believe that milk was the cause.
Okay. Further question? Representative Johnson?
No, I was just going to suggest Anna and...
I'm sorry. Yes, we've been joined by Representative Seaton and Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Edgman.
To the bill sponsor, I was just reading the analysis of the fiscal note, and it talks about basically monitoring 7 dairies on the road system in the Mat-Su, and then how it would require 3 new positions to do that. But this bill, if I read it correctly, is an attempt to stimulate economic development. Is that not correct?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, yes, this is trying to establish more economic development. As far as the dairies, and I believe they're down to 6 now, dairies that are being checked, they do get checked every month anyhow. They do have somebody from DEC goes out and takes samples and checks those anyhow for their grade A qualification. So that person's already there.
So just to follow, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
So I'm trying to just better understand this issue, knowing very little about the Mat-Su Valley and dairies and so forth. So if this legislation didn't pass, and there's some jobs at stake, I'm sure, and people's livelihoods and some opportunities that might go by the wayside, but what would it mean, again, back to the economic development perspective, setting all the other implications of this legislation aside?
Through the chair, trying to understand your question, Representative Edgman, and I know you sit on the EDT committee. I mean, economic development is important to you. And trying to grow agriculture in this state is very difficult. And to try and I'm trying to run through my mind, you know, the amount of grain that could be purchased through this and the sales to other outside markets. So it goes beyond that, but I think directly to people who want to sell this, and I think we can have some people that are going to testify on the value of their goat's milk up to $1 or $2 per ounce, I believe, that they can do that for. And if they have some goats, and I know that there has been raw milk sales in a condo-type cow or other cows where it's been touted where they can get up to $5 or $6 per gallon for their milk.
Okay. We have a couple people online. The first 3 I'm going to hear from is the state epidemiologist, the DEC Vet's Office, and the Department of Law. And then I will go to other testifiers. So let me begin right off the bat. Dr. McLaughlin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Then welcome to Resources, Doc, and I'm sure you have had many people call you and discuss this issue with you. And the committee here is very interested in your comments, so please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you all today about this bill. I just like to start by saying the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services really does take the firm position that the health risks associated with legalizing the sale of raw milk substantially outweigh the benefits. And there are a few main reasons why this is. The first is that unpasteurized milk is far more likely to contain human pathogens than pasteurized milk, and therefore increases the risk of serious and sometimes fatal infectious illness among milk consumers. The other reason is that those who are at increased risk for serious health outcomes include the developing fetus, young children, and the elderly who may be incapable of making an informed decision with respect to raw milk versus pasteurized milk consumption. And then finally, the potential health benefits of raw milk consumption are largely unsubstantiated by empirical scientific evidence. So our stance is in support of prohibiting the sale of raw milk, and this is consistent with positions taken by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Federal Food and Drug Administration, the American Medical Association, the American Public Health Association, American Academy of Pediatrics, and other professional health organizations in our country. And I'll just provide you with a few statistics that I think will be helpful for sort of putting this into perspective. First of all, many human pathogens are commonly found in raw milk, including E. coli 0157H7, which is a known to be a lethal pathogen for some people, and Salmonella and Campylobacter, and the list goes on and on. These pathogens may be shed directly from the animal or contaminate milk during the collection and handling process, and it's very, very difficult to prevent that from occurring. Multiple studies have illustrated a dramatic increase in the incidence of multi-drug-resistant bacteria that are present on farms throughout America, no matter if they're small or large farms. And this really increases the risk of serious health outcomes as a result of getting these infections. Also, between 1973 and 1992, raw milk was associated with 46 outbreaks. 87% of these outbreaks occurred in states where commercial distribution of raw milk was legal. Between 1998 and 2005, the CDC traced more than 1,000 illnesses, 104 hospitalizations, and 2 deaths to the consumption of raw milk or cheese produced from raw milk. And brand new data that will be released this spring by CDC has shown that between 1998 and 2006, 92% of the 50 outbreaks that have occurred in the U.S. during that time period were linked to liquid milk consumption, for which the pasteurization of the milk was known, and these 92% of these outbreaks were due to the consumption of unpasteurized milk, 92%. A few other things I just want to relay to you all is that most foods run the risk of being contaminated with human pathogens, and the risk varies depending on the origin of the food product, how it's raised, and how it's handled by the producer and the distributor and the consumer. Each food group is assessed independently. And this bill, as you'll hear from others, trying to compare raw milk with, you know, hamburger and beef and all these other things, this bill is not about the legality of selling raw beef, chicken, oysters, or honey, or any other product. It's about the legality of selling raw milk. And so we need to focus on comparing the risks and benefits associated with a new law that would legalize the sale of raw milk in Alaska and use regulations to protect the public's health. And the risk of serious and potentially lethal infections associated with raw milk products are substantially greater than the risks associated with pasteurized milk products. That's sort of the bottom line here. And again, I'll just reiterate the fact that we as government officials, and certainly I as the state epidemiologist, have a duty to protect those who do not have the capacity or sufficient information needed to make a well-informed decision with respect to the foods that they consume. And we know that the developing fetus, young children, the elderly, pregnant women, are folks who are at increased risk of illness, and particularly young children and developing fetus have no say really in whether it really don't have the capacity to be able to make a well-informed decision. And I can guarantee you that the vast majority of Alaskans probably don't know what it means if they become infected with Listeria monocytogenes. That's a bacteria that can cause abortion. And so, you know, really understanding the health risks can be very difficult for somebody who doesn't study infectious diseases. There are other costs associated with this bill, including the loss of public trust in a product and also the loss of trust in government officials who are making these decisions. Also, there's a cost to the industry if an outbreak occurs. I can tell you that whenever we have foodborne outbreaks, we try to protect the name of, let's say an outbreak occurs at a restaurant. We do our best to protect the name of that restaurant, because if the word gets out through the media or some other source which restaurant was implicated in the outbreak, the chances that that restaurant going under are very, very high. So tremendous potential cost to the industry if an outbreak occurs. And again, I'll just reiterate the fact that the benefits of raw milk consumption, there's just very minimal scientific evidence to back it up. And I'm sure there will be raw milk proponents who will present some limited evidence in favor of the consumption of raw milk due to health benefits. But, you know, I would really encourage you to ask whether or not they have studied epidemiology and understand the whole process of scientific inquiry, and I can speak to that more as sort of this discussion goes on later on. But I would just like to summarize that the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services strongly opposes this bill on the grounds that allowing the sale of raw milk poses a substantial risk to the health of Alaskans. Thank you so much.
Okay, Doctor?
Yes.
I think you probably have a lot of your testimony written. Is that true?
A lot of it is, yes, sir.
Yeah, it would be really helpful if we could get that. Is it possible for you to send us a copy of that so that we can include it in the information as this bill progresses and allows the committee members to read your testimony again?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, committee members?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roses has a question.
I did, thank you. Doctor, could you tell me if we know of any cases of raw milk outbreak or any illnesses related to raw milk sales in Alaska?
As far as raw milk outbreaks that have occurred in Alaska, I am not aware of any in the recent past. I've only been the state epidemiologist here for a short period of time. I can check into that and get back in touch with you, Representative Roses.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
And if you could, when you send us whatever written testimony you have, just go ahead and include that in your testimony if you could.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that.
And Representative Edgman?
Yes. What's the general period, if there is such, for milk when it's raw to go bad? If it's properly cared for and so forth, what's the shelf life, quote unquote?
It's a shelf life question, Doc.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I think the state veterinarian might be the best person to respond to that. Would you prefer to ask that to state veterinarian?
Yes, I can wait.
Okay.
Yeah, we have him up right after you speak. Representative Seaton has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you explain to me? Can you explain to me a little more detail about the drug resistant bacteria argument in this case?
Representative Seaton, I'd be happy to through the chair. We know that there's sort of a laundry list of bacteria that have been implicated in the consumption of milk and specifically raw milk. We know that these bacteria have been changing over time. Over the past 10 years in particular, we have seen a dramatic increase in the incidence and prevalence of multi-drug and single-drug resistant strains of various bacteria. These bacteria are present on farms, and we know that animals shed these resistant bacteria in their feces. And we know that one of the prime ways for milk to be contaminated is through fecal contamination. And so while somebody is actually milking the cow, there is, and during the whole handling process, there's a tremendous risk of fecal contamination of that milk. And those bacteria that have contaminated that milk oftentimes, and it's becoming more and more prevalent, are drug resistant. So it makes it much more difficult for us to treat the infections.
I'm guessing what you're saying is that pasteurization would eliminate drug-resistant bacteria, but once you've acquired the bacteria, then because they are drug-resistant, that treatment would be difficult.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, actually what I'm saying is that when we look at raw milk versus pasteurized milk. We know that grade A raw milk for pasteurization has a threshold, an FDA threshold of 300,000 bacteria per mil. That's an allowable threshold. Whereas grade A pasteurized milk has an allowable threshold. It has to be under 20,000 bacteria per milliliter. So what I'm saying is that people who consume raw milk are at far greater risk of bacterial infection. And what we're seeing now is that there is an increased prevalence of drug-resistant bacteria on farms. So basically what I'm saying is you're at increased risk for infection if you consume raw milk, and there is an increased chance if you get infected that whether you're drinking raw or pasteurized milk, there's an increased chance that that the bacteria that's infected you is resistant to at least one drug.
Thank you.
Does that make sense?
It does. Representative Johnson?
Thank you. And I had to step out a second. If this has been asked, I apologize. You said 92% in your testimony, and I missed it a little bit, 92% of the cases, if you'd go back to that, were tied to raw milk. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'd be happy to restate that. New data from from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show that between 1998 and 2006, 92% of the 50 outbreaks that had been worked up during that time period that were linked to liquid milk consumption for which the pasteurization of milk was known were due to the consumption of unpasteurized milk. So basically what I'm saying is that of the 50 outbreaks that have occurred between 1998 and 2006 in the United States, for which the epidemiologist who worked up the outbreak determined whether or not the milk was pasteurized or that status was known. So 92% of those outbreaks were due to the consumption of unpasteurized milk.
Follow up, if I might. So if I understand, there were 46 cases caused by non-pasteurized milk in 8 years?
That's Representative Johnson through the chair. That's correct. Not cases, outbreaks. These are outbreaks. So an outbreak could involve several cases or it could involve dozens to hundreds of cases.
Can you tell me how many cases these specific outbreaks involved?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, that would be a very extensive process. I could certainly provide for you some recent journal articles that detail that. And this particular fact that I've shared with you is based on new data that the CDC will be presenting at the Council for State and Territorial Epidemiologists meeting this summer. I believe it's actually in June. And so those data will not be published until June, but we do have some very exhaustive studies that have been done between looking at raw milk consumption as a risk factor for infectious illness between 1973 and 1992, and another study which shows the same finding, or which goes into a similar review between 1998 and 2005, and I'd be happy to share those articles with you.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr.
Follow up, please.
And when you said an outbreak, could you please tell me an outbreak of what? Is it one case, or is it multiple cases of bacterial outbreaks, or is it all the same? Is it different? Can you tell me just how many of what kind of outbreaks have happened since then?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, who was asking the question?
Representative Johnson.
Okay. Representative Johnson, through the chair. Just to sort of give you a feel for what we consider to be an outbreak of any infectious disease, it really depends on the disease and the prevalence of the disease in the community, sort of the baseline prevalence. It is oftentimes a gray zone, what is considered to be an outbreak. But for something like E. coli 0157H7, which is a potentially lethal pathogen and has very serious health implications, it's not a really, really common pathogen like influenza or some of these other pathogens that we see every common cold. one case of E. coli 0157H7 could potentially be considered to be an outbreak. Certainly three cases where people are, you know, maybe three kids who are at a daycare center together all have E. coli 0157H7. We would probably consider that almost certainly to be an outbreak. One case of botulism is considered an outbreak. But when you're talking about something like salmonella or campylobacter, oftentimes we consider to be an outbreak to be 10 or more cases, for example. So it just depends on the pathogen and the baseline rate of these infectious illnesses by disease in the community.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up on that particular point. If you're discerning between pasteurized and non-pasteurized and 48 outbreaks in a period of time, how many outbreaks did we have from the pasteurized?
Representative Faircloth, through the chair, it's basically the data that I relayed show that between 1998 and 2006, there were 46 outbreaks that were attributed to the consumption of unpasteurized milk and four that were that were attributed to the consumption of pasteurized milk.
And this Representative Gatto, was that pasteurized milk compromised somehow in not just its shelf life, but in the pasteurization process where maybe the temperature was wrong or the duration was wrong?
I'm sorry, who was that asked that question? Oh, Representative Gatto, through the chair. Basically, what happens during the pasteurization process is that temperatures are brought rapidly up to at least 161 degrees Fahrenheit for at least 15 seconds. The milk is then immediately cooled down to below 40 degrees and packaged into plastic bags or jugs. And pasteurization must be sufficient to destroy all human pathogens that may be carried in milk from the cow. And so the pasteurization temperatures are sufficient to destroy all yeasts, mold, and many spoilage bacteria. So once the milk has gone through an appropriate pasteurization process, then that milk is considered to be sterilized from human pathogens. There may be other bacteria that are present that are heat resistant, but they are not human pathogens, with one exception, that is spore-forming bacteria, for example, Bacillus cereus, and the bacteria that can cause botulism can produce heat-resistant spores. But for all vegetative bacteria, the vegetative state of bacteria, those pathogens are all destroyed through the pasteurization process. What happens when we're talking about consumption of pasteurized milk leading to outbreaks is almost always, and Dr. Gerlach, the state veterinarian, could probably respond to this very well, but the contamination occurs after the pasteurization process. And so that certainly is always a risk.
Okay, that really was the question on where in the process the contamination occurred. And the question really was, did it occur? Did it compromise the pasteurization, or was it compromised by the pasteurization, which didn't meet the specs? But once it leaves pasteurization, well, then there are other ways it can be contaminated. But are there any more questions? Excuse me. Thanks very much, Dr. McLaughlin. Once again, we'd appreciate getting that testimony in writing if we can.
My pleasure, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much, and I'll get you that information.
Thank you. Dr. Gerlach, are you online? I think you are. Dr. Gerlach, are you online? Okay.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay. Did you have testimony, or did you want to simply be there for questions?
I was directed to be available for questions, sir.
Okay. Were you listening to the previous testimony?
Yes, sir.
He did leave it to you.
The one question that I do recall was the shelf life, and most states that certify raw milk have a shelf life for 14 days after the milk is produced. The other question with respect to the inherent problems or the contamination of raw milk that generally is associated with the production on the farm, there have been a number of studies in 2002, 2004, and 2005 that throughout anywhere from, I think there were 30 states that were involved in this sampling procedure. over 1,200 farms, they detected in the raw milk that was produced on those farms anywhere from 2 to 10% of the farms had they were able to go ahead and identify one of the food pathogens, human pathogens in the product. In two of the studies that specifically looked at the data and composed it in such a way, they found that 25% of the dairies that produced the milk actually had contaminated product. Obviously, this contaminated product would then be cleaned or processed so that the pathogens would be removed and during the pasteurization process. The one thing that I guess I would emphasize that that Dr. McLaughlin had stated was the fact that even in states that have certified test programs for raw milk is the fact that the 90% of the recent outbreaks of foodborne illnesses have occurred in those states that have allowed that. And one that I think shows a good example of the concerns is one that occurred in Pennsylvania, in the fact that a raw milk outbreak was associated with one farm in February of 2007. The investigation came back to that farm after some people got sick. The producer, and I've been to that farm when I lived in Pennsylvania. It's a very nice, clean farm. They withheld their product. They went through additional testing. They came back into compliance. They were able to go ahead and sell that milk again. A month later, in March of 2007, there was another problem with the milk, that they found the same bacteria present in that milk, and that the sales were stopped again. In fact, that the farmer was not able to sell the milk. He was actually, after March, was giving it away after he had tested positive again to come back into compliance. And in July of 2007, there was another episode where they had the contaminated bacteria getting into the milk and causing illness in people that consumed the milk. So this just goes to show the example that even on a dairy that was exemplary in its sanitation and disinfection and had gone through rigorous testing within the program, that within the course of four months, that they had three outbreaks of the same problem. And so that I think that's where the big concern is with respect to the risk associated with the raw milk product.
Okay, I need you to, for the sake of the recording, Secretary, to identify your position.
Yes, sir. My position would be to be in favor of prohibiting...
No, I'm sorry. No, who you work for, your affiliation. Are you with DEC?
Yes, sir. This is Dr. Robert Gerlach. I'm the state veterinarian in the Division of Environmental Health in the Department of Environmental Conservation.
Thank you. And I think you did send written testimony. Am I correct?
No, I did not. I've had a number. I apologize. I had sent testimony to my director and commissioner, and I had sent down some testimony to representatives that had requested some information, but I did not write a formal testimony, sir.
Okay. So you do not have formal testimony, written testimony?
Not at this time period. I can compose that at if you would like, sir.
I would. I think we need to get the positions in our packet, because this is a question that is really outside of the realm of
non-farmers or non-consumers of this who are exposed to this position in question for the first time. And so we need to hear from people that have a professional opinion and people who are involved on a commercial basis and put that information together. So if you could do that for us and send it to me, I would appreciate that.
Yes, I certainly would, sir.
Okay. Any questions for... We do have a question from Representative Edgman, sir.
Yes, following my theme of asking a bunch of one-on-one questions here, given the history that you just provided, do you know of any states that provide raw milk to schools?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I do not know.
I'm still trying to sort of weigh the benefits. I see the stack of letters of support that we have for this versus the risks that we're beginning to hear more and more about, and I'm sure we're going to hear other people talk about the risks as well. But so I'll just wait till somebody else comes to the witness table can answer that.
Provided position. I can't read it. Oh, okay. Thank you. Sorry. Representative Seaton?
Thank you. I had a question on the what happens in other states that do this as far as the drug-resistant bacteria. Is there generally regulations that prohibit dairies that do any raw milk from using any antibiotics either in the feed or in the general use of their livestock?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes, there are certain restrictions that dairies go through if they want to label their milk as organic, that they're restricted from using certain products. The occurrence of multi-resistant bacteria have been found on all farms and actually, unfortunately, within wildlife and in other environmental sampling throughout both rural and urban areas. So unfortunately, we see an increased occurrence in any setting where there are animals of these multi-drug-resistant bacteria.
What to follow up?
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
But generally, any authority or any area that allows the raw milk sale has prescription that does not allow those farms that are going to be labeling any raw milk sale to use antibiotics, or what I'm trying to do is find out whether there is any countervailing stoppage of or prevention of drug-resistant bacteria on the dairies that would be allowed to do raw milk sales versus those where the pasteurization would kill that human pathogen bacteria after incorporation, so it doesn't seem like it would be as necessary to prevent the use of antibiotics for the livestock.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, There has not been a study that has shown that farms that have a decreased use of antibiotics have any less of a prevalence of these multi-drug-resistant bacteria. They seem to be pretty widespread, and it seems to be inherent with the production of animals.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm new to the whole milk thing myself. I never drank it when I grew up. Well, I'm so short now. Can you tell me that this bill specifically addresses the sale of non-pasteurized milk? Is there another process that raw milk would go through, or is this straight out of the cow and into a pan and into a bottle of milk? Is there a process that goes along with it? I guess
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, this bill would address just the direct sale of the raw milk from the animal. Generally, it's contained within a bulk tank or a vat and then distributed so that there is not a process that the milk goes through prior to its sale.
Okay. Thank you.
And this Representative Gatto, on that point, does DEC require a daily cleanup of whatever the facility was that processed milk? Are stainless steel containers a requirement? Are other things in place? And I guess that's, I'm curious about that myself.
Yes, Representative Gatto, through the chair, all grade A dairies are required to go through a permitting process where the dairy itself is inspected for cleanliness and handling of the animals and the waste. The water is tested, and they go and check the equipment that's used for handling the milk. There is a standard procedure for cleaning and disinfecting the collection materials or the collection equipment to go ahead and gather the milk, as well as transfer it to the bulk tank. And then there are procedures that are required for standard sanitation and cleanliness of the workers that are caring for the animals, as well as collecting the milk samples, so that we have a very rigorous system to try to assure that the production of grade A milk on the farm is as best it can be handled to reduce the contamination and reduce the incident of foodborne bacteria. And even with those guidelines, we still see, as I said, anywhere from 2 to 10% of the production facilities end up having the bacteria in the milk before it's pasteurized.
Hey, and for the benefit of the members, the DEC fiscal note of $270,000 has a two-page analysis, which incorporates quite a bit of the information that's been related to us. Representative Fairclough has a question.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, it's a comment in response to Representative Kawasaki. Just for the committee's disclosure, I have milked cows before and drank cow's milk, and at least on the farm that I was on, we filtered it, so you wouldn't leave it alone. So I think there is some process that there. It may not be standardized, but each dairy or people who own cows that plan to drink the milk or goats do have processes in place. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I can just kind of make several observations. And as Representative Fairclough pointed out, and Representative Seaton has asked some questions of, certainly there are safe handling procedures, and that happens with a lot of foods that we eat. When we go to farmers markets or even to the trade fairs and buy jelly or jams that are put in those. And I'd like to try and put things into perspective here. And when we talk about these, you know, the incident rates for outbreaks associated with pasteurized milk, you know, when we're talking about eggs, beef, game, pork, poultry, fish, shellfish, grains, fats, oils, processed foods, vegetables, fruits, nuts, and also, you know, it was also stated earlier that there was 39 outbreaks from the CDC reported from 1998 to now. But between 1998 and 2005, there were over 10,000 documented outbreaks that contributed to foodborne illnesses. Raw milk was associated to 0.4% of those cases. Less than one-half of 1% was associated with raw milk. And yes, I mean, if you don't handle any food safe, but look at the outbreaks that have occurred recently with spinach or strawberries and what they're doing with that. With all these food products that are put on there, they're not compared. They don't compare with other products and what they're doing, and that's the part that I think has been somewhat frustrating for me in listening to this, is the question is whether raw milk carries unique risks that distinguish it from other ordinary foods that we consume, such as pasteurized milk, produce, hot dogs, deli meats. The FDA doesn't make any of these comparisons. They've singled out raw milk to do all this, but they don't tell us how many people got sick because they ate hot dogs or spinach or strawberries, and how many outbreaks have we had because of all these other food diseases? But we're talking about 0.4% in the last 18 years, less than one-half of 1% that could get traced to this. And then it goes back to safe handling practice. you know, for the ability for you as a consumer to walk up to a farm, and certainly I would say do not purchase milk if you see a lot of manure around on their udders, or if you don't think that it's sanitary conditions. Well, that's try, I'm trying to put things into perspective. Less than 0.5%.
I think in here it was, you might find this on a grocery shelf.
Right. You could find it.
So that you won't have that opportunity. And I think that was part of the bill itself. Do you have any further questions? Representative Wilson has a question.
No, I really don't. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr.
So your statement is you don't have a question.
I don't have a question, but I do have a comment, because I was raised in a dairy farm, and my dad milked well over 100 cows. He knew every one of them by name, and there were five of us kids, and we drank milk the whole time we were at home, raw milk, and it was filtered. And but that was it. And then after I got married, I worked in a dairy farm, and again I drank raw milk. And I can say, actually, after that, we moved on and did other things. But we had goats, and we drank raw goat milk.
Okay.
And never ever one time in all of that time did anybody get sick ever. You know, so you know, because I've been there, done that, I feel pretty confident in this, and it does make a difference on how the person handles it and how they clean the udders and things like that. That makes a difference. But if somebody's going to be doing something like that, they're going to be pretty careful.
And they've got my curiosity. Both of you say it's filtered. What's the filter?
Cheesecloth. Well, cheesecloth. Ours was a kind of a felt like round
strainer pit.
Yeah, and that you just put down in, and then you put a kind of a something over to hold it in place, and then you poured it through that into the container.
And what do you find in the cheesecloth or filter? Are there any solids in there that the milk simply won't pass through?
I mean, there might be few hairs. Cow hairs or something like that.
Okay. You know, this is valuable. I was brought up in New York City. I never saw milk outside of a bottle.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Faircloth.
It depends what the filter picks up. Depends on how the cows are actually milked. Mine were hand milked, so the bucket was out sitting under the cow, so you could have a hair that's floating around, or more typically a piece of grass or a leaf that might get into the milk when they're out of the barn and stuff. So, but it was cheesecloth filtered.
And what you did for sanitation was that bucket that you got today. Did you just throw the milk into a larger container, and then that bucket was used all day long, and then at the end of the day you swished it in clean water, or what?
Well, mine first is from a smaller farm, so mine was a one or two cows. So you bring up the cows and rattle the bell so they think they're going to have fed, get their head locked in, and your bucket is clean, and you take it into the refrigerator so that mom, or in my case, auntie, could process the milk and either make homemade ice cream for those of us kids that wait around long enough, or
butter,
or cream. Representative Edgman and I have been asking whether it would be half and half, and other products that Representative Newman is proposing. I'm sure it's all of the milk products. But the udders are cleaned. To sanitation, the process is to clean the udders and make sure that your air is clean. You use a stainless steel bucket to make sure that the bucket's clean. Those are sterilized each evening and ready to go for the next morning, because those cows are regular. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you cleaned your hands, cleaned the udders with a cloth or something, and then proceeded?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure my aunt hopes that I did, but I don't remember that particular process.
Don't you?
I think we wore plastic latex gloves, I believe, when we actually milked.
Oh.
And we didn't wear gloves, but...
You're older.
But there was, everything that you used in the milk products in at all was washed with soap and water and a special, I don't know what it was, it looked like kind of like a betadine solution or something that you put in, and you washed it and kept them clean, and then the cow's udders were also washed, and everything was clean, and we did it with surge milkers. And they were, you know, you hooked them all on, and...
Boy.
And
my thought, where is gavel to gavel when you need it?
Mr. Chairman, I had to have technique.
Utter disrespect.
utter disrespect.
Okay, if there are no further comments from us, we want to hear also...
Mr. Chairman.
I don't know what's left, but go ahead.
No, actually, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the latitude that you've allowed us to express some positive history with our dairy farmers and the things that they provide for our country. But that said, CDC and the recommendations that are coming out of our Health and Human Services Department, anyway, the testimony I've heard loud and clear, and I am at pause to take into account all of the health issues that they're bringing forward. So I didn't want to think the laughter or the lightheartedness of that particular discussion means that I don't understand the seriousness of what's being brought forward in the public health, the risks that are being said by those who've testified. So I just want to make sure that, one, to disclose, because we are trying to make sure that people understand where we're coming from, and we all have life experiences that are different. And so I just say that I am listening very closely to the testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not sure if, you know, when we're talking back a few years where we were on farms, whether we had the problem of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And I know we have that huge problem in our hospitals that we do all these things to take care of. And I would really like, you know, as we go further along in the testimony, people to address, you know, the aspect of where so much antibiotics are being used on farm animals and everything else. And if we're talking about human pathogens, what is the risk? And through that compared to what it was, you know, before we were using antibiotics on the farms. I mean, you know, it's not only in injections, but it's also in feed. And so all of a sudden we have a, you know, I'm not seeing any restrictions here in saying you can have this, but you can go ahead and use antibiotics on your livestock. I mean, we don't want livestock sick, but if we're creating livestock that have internally,
it's in the milk,
antibiotic resistant bacteria, we are, you know, the question is, are we looking at a different situation than somebody living on the farm, taking care of those farm animals themselves and knowing what those situations are? And also, is there a difference between people that are continuously consuming the raw milk product and getting immunities to those diseases normally? I mean, it's just like when we go overseas or someplace else and you you drink the water, and we all know what happens, and because you're not immune to that. And so the question that I want to find out is, you know, also if these are going to be on sales on the shelves in grocery stores with marketing and other promotions for people to buy this, is there going to be that consistency where you develop immunities over time to certain diseases that that are in your constant environment, constant food supply? So those are some of the questions that I'd like answered as we go through the testimony. Thank
you. It's off topic, but every time I see, you know, antibacterial soap, antibacterial wipes, clean your floors with antibacterial floor cleaner so that babies can walk on the floors, I like to talk to the oldest grandmas I can find and say, do you think that, as just as you said, that we need to get exposed in order to have a healthier life later on? And I know cradle cap, you know, you get cradle cap and then it's gone. Well, what if you avoid it? You don't get chicken pox as a kid, then you take a vaccine and it's kind of partial, and then you get another case of chicken pox anyway. And so I'm not sure myself if we've reached the level where it's more harmful to keep using antibiotic resistant things than to just face it and get whatever you're going to get and get over it, unless it's fatal.
in which case then, and I've worried a little bit about the testimony about infants. If you, or pregnant moms that are going to pass this, I don't know if it goes through the placenta or not. I don't know. Many of them do. Some don't. So as, there's a few questions, but the one I have that's most important is hopefully will be answered next. Elise Hasea, Department of Law, are you there? Elise, can you hear me?
Yes, I am. This is Elise Chia from the Department of Law.
Thank you. I know you have some testimony, but if not, I do have this question of, I'm perfectly okay when a willing buyer meets a willing seller, and no one else has to pay a penalty for whatever they've agreed to. I do have the thought that, is the state in allowing the sale of raw milk off the hook? Or can someone come back and say, I would have never bought that, it should have been illegal, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm sorry, I wasn't clear who was speaking.
Oh, this is Representative Gatto, and I need you to, and I've introduced you, but I need you to introduce yourself with your affiliation.
Oh, hello, this is Elise Chia from the Department of Law, and I'm available for questioning, and also to answer your question, Representative Gatto, through the chair. I actually had concerns myself. I spoke with the head of our tort section about the risk management aspects of this bill. If the legislature chooses to weigh the risks and make such a public policy decision, then its decision should be protected by immunity. So if you so choose to pass such a law, that is the way it should be allowed. It's up to you to weigh it as a public policy decision.
Okay, I have a question from Representative Johnson.
Thank you. My question would be on the same line, but what about the liabilities of the farmer? If you were to sell milk that had a pathogen in it, would there need to be liability insurance carried by these dairy farmers? Would they be liable for the, well, could they be sued and lose their property over it?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, yes. Certainly, it appears from what I have seen, the facts that I have seen, that raw milk can be injurious to your health, and this person certainly could be sued if someone becomes ill and sustains damages. And as for whether they have to carry insurance, that's not a requirement in this bill. That's not something that I've seen, but it certainly, you know, could be, but it's not legally required. Yes, so they would be liable.
I think we have a follow-up from Representative Johnson.
So there's nothing that, because we pass a statute that makes it legal, and I don't see any indemnification in the bill, there is nothing in doing that would indemnify the dairy farmer from a legal action that you see in this bill or in current law, either common law or statute?
Representative Johnson, no. There's no indemnification provision.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Seeing none, I will proceed to public testimony. I'm sorry. Representative Seaton has a question.
Thank you. And we have in our packet a sheet looking at current raw milk regulations for Alaska. And basically it's saying that same as the federal law or federal regulation there. And so I guess the question was that under the federal regulations, no person shall cause to be delivered into the interstate commerce or shall sell or otherwise distribute. Now, for interstate commerce, now, does the Alaska, so if that was held within Alaska so that the raw milk was being distributed only within the state, does that mean there's no violation of the federal regulation? And, can you go ahead and let me know what's happening there?
Yes, I believe that was Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Through the chair, yes, that is correct. States are allowed to regulate raw milk sales within their borders. The raw milk would not be able to, for consumption by consumers, be sold back and forth between the states. But states are able to regulate it themselves at this point.
Okay, follow up.
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
So in your interpretation of this, then, cheese that was made from raw milk could not be sold out of state. It would have to be entirely consumed within state.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes, that is my interpretation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that point, I believe if it's has a shelf life of 60 or 90 days, then it can be sold.
Okay. Kristen
that's
Ryan.
That's how they sell cheese.
Kristen? We have Kristen Ryan here in the audience who represents DEC and I think may be able to make a salient point or two. Just before that, Kristen, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Trying to get a clarification with Representative Newman here. My interpretation of what this is saying is that 21 CFR says that you're not going to be able to sell that in interstate commerce, no matter whether it's cheese or what it is, and that the only thing that we can do is have this raw milk sales or raw milk product sales within the state of Alaska, and that there is no interstate. So, Representative Newman, am I misreading something?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, although that doesn't say it here, I believe we probably have some people online who can answer that question, but I believe unprocessed milk that's made into cheese is as long as it's been refrigerated for 60 or 90 days, there's a time limit, then it has to have an aging process associated with it. And then you can do that. But I think there's some people online that can talk to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well,
okay.
Oh, Representative Seaton, this is Elise Shia. If I may, looking at the text, there is a curing of certain cheese varieties that would be exempt from that CFR regulation. If you look at Section 1240.61, paragraph A.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You look familiar to us, but we need you on the record with name and affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the director for the Division of Environmental Health. So Dr. Gerlach works in my division, and I have to apologize for him. I didn't have him prepared to answer questions. I was going to try to do most of the testimony. Otherwise, I'm sure he would have had written testimony for you guys. But we will send you some things. The Department of Health and the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Department of Natural Resources have created a fact sheet, and I don't believe you've got it. I'm getting that impression. So we'll make sure that gets into your packets as well. And that it's pretty succinct, but outlines our position and why we feel that way. So we'll get you that as soon as we can. I just wanted to clarify a few points you've heard it sounds like you'd like some more edification. Yes, cheese, another allowable process other than pasteurization is aging for 60 days. So that is adequate to eliminate the pathogens that exist in the cheese. So, and that only would work for hard cheeses, goat cheese, soft cheeses, that's not going to make the product shelf stable. So they wouldn't be able to process cheese and sell it legally that way. But it is correct, the federal statutes do not allow any raw milk or milk products to be sold across state lines. But within the state boundaries, FDA is not necessarily silent. They give recommendations, but they don't tell us what to do. It's a very different relationship than what we have with EPA and other federal agencies that mandate, that we do certain things within our states. But to that degree, what sounds like some of you are looking at, the state has gone and adopted the pasteurized milk ordinance, which is what FDA writes and we use to regulate milk. So we've just adopted the federal rules outright in Alaska and apply these same standards. There's just a few things that haven't been mentioned. Pasteurization not only eliminates, the pathogens that we've been talking about, but contagious diseases as well. And that's one reason why public health tends to get more involved with pasteurization issues. Tuberculosis, brucellosis, and lots of other diseases that are contagious are eliminated by pasteurization. And we tend to get a little more interested in restricting diseases that are contagious. And no one has talked about the benefits of raw milk. I'm sure you will be hearing. There's many people who believe that, but like our sister agencies, FDA and CDC, we have not seen that there's any significant reduction in benefits from pasteurization process of raw milk. One person asked about schools and federal funding. I believe that was you, Representative Edgemond. There, schools would not be able to sell raw milk, especially if they received any federal funding. In fact, that was one of the reasons we created a pasteurization or a milk program in the first place, so that Alaskan milk producers could sell milk to schools in the military. They had to comply with federal standards to sell to those organizations. So that's one of the reasons we're in business. There is organic standards that would require if you wanted to label your milk as organic, you would have to label it has had antibiotics in it. But there's no restrictions in this law that says this raw milk couldn't have antibiotics the way it's written right now. And finally, I wanted to make a point that there's emerging diseases. And in particular, what I found fascinating in my job is that emerging diseases come from animals primarily. The nexus between humans and animals is where we start to see these diseases that come out that we never had before. And one great example is E. coli. That was not a disease 100 years ago or 50 years ago that we were so worried about, but we are now, obviously. So that's just another reason for us why we like to rely on methods like pasteurization rather than antibiotics.
Ask you the question, we normally carry E. coli in the gut anyway. Is this a different E. coli, some subspecies, or just the numbers that make a difference?
Representative Gatto, it's a different subspecies. E. coli 0157, it only predominant, and I would have to defer to Bob for the specifics, but it's primarily in bovine intestines. And we have forms of E. coli in us as well, but not that same type.
Okay, thank you.
So, one thing I do want to strengthen what has been said. The states, we've been looking at what states do on this issue. Do they allow raw milk? Those that do, how do they do it? And what we've unfortunately found is that the permitting or pre-certification process just doesn't seem to be effective. It doesn't stop outbreaks from occurring. Which is disappointing because that's obviously what we use for other products that are dangerous, like oysters or shellfish. And we aren't finding the ability to stop outbreaks. In fact, Washington State, I was just reading, just had one in 2005. And as Bob mentioned, Stump Acres, they, you know, had been thoroughly checked 3 times, and they still had outbreaks. So good sanitation practices and testing, pre-testing of the product doesn't seem to stop the outbreaks. It still seems to happen.
Is there any indication that exposure to some of these critters generates a permanent immunity?
Representative Gatto, I couldn't answer that, and there's probably some indication of that, but unfortunately what we're seeing is people with permanent kidney damage after being exposed to E. coli 0157. So, you know, maybe eventually over time that would happen, but over low dose exposure, similar to a vaccine approach, but, that's not what we're seeing.
So. Questions for Ms. Ryan? Seeing and hearing none, thank you very much for your testimony. I'm going to go next to Don Linderman, owner of a dairy. Don, are you online, Lintelman?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much. We're ready for your testimony. And we have quite a few people wanted to testify. I'd like you to be able to summarize it in about 3 minutes, if you can.
Okay, well, I'm from Northern Lights Dairy here in Delta Junction, and we do pasteurize our milk. And I have some inquiries about raw milk ourselves, and to me, we went into pasteurization for the simple reason that we had more milk at the time than we could sell as raw milk, and then we run across problems that people would bring jars back, and we'd have to wash the jars out and so on. So it created a large problem for us. So right now we're in the process of processing milk, and we do have the charm 2 tests that we're using, which takes out 40 different antibiotics out of the cows. And we do have coliform and SPC counts that we do on the farms. So there is to keep up with all of it, to keep it straight and to get our farms in for grade A milk to sell. So there's just two of us right now. So it used to be five of us, but there's just two of us now. And I wouldn't want to see this raw milk deal to go through.
Hey, Don, grade A milk, is does that require pasteurization, or can raw milk be grade A?
No, it has to be pasteurized.
What do you call raw milk then? Is there a different grading? Is it grade double A?
Well, it would be grade B, and there is grade C. Okay. Grade B is into cans or into bulk tanks until it comes into inspection. And then grade C is milking by hand.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Well, thank you very much, Mr. Lintelman. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Going to go to Larry DeVilbiss, the former Director of Agriculture for the state. Larry, you online? Larry DeVilbiss?
Yes, Representative and Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead and give us your affiliation at this time.
Okay, my affiliation is very simple right now. I'm a farmer, and I would like to testify to this and appreciate your taking the time on this. I've studied this for about 10 years. It's my understanding that a majority of the states have raw milk legislation. I know from my meeting with the regulators on a national basis that none of that raw milk legislation was enacted or supported by the regulating agencies in any of those states. It always happened at the level of the legislators. And I've also followed closely the horror stories that you've already heard, and would just like to repeat that it is minuscule compared to a lot of the rest of the food industry, or look at alcohol, for instance. I bet the two fatalities that were already cited today would pale compared to what's happened because of alcohol, but that doesn't justify the doing something rash. I believe that raw milk, and I've got to say that I grew up here milking cows by hand. When I was a teenager, we had to milk 15 cows each, my brother and I, by hand before we had to walk to school. So I have some experience in this. And I've also traveled and been involved a lot overseas. And it's my opinion, it's an unscientific opinion, that the sterility to which the average American has been exposed and grown up in nowadays, due in part to the fact that they are only exposed to pasteurized milk, has created a race of people that are extremely vulnerable. And for that reason, the average American that goes overseas is not even able to drink the water and eat the products that the people in those countries eat every day. And I think sooner or later that is going to really backfire on us as a nation. And it's one reason when there are E. coli outbreaks, like there was with the spinach a few years ago, we are extremely vulnerable. And it's my conviction that the raw milk could play a huge role in building up immune systems and helping us. I don't think anybody is recommending that we dump raw milk on the unsuspecting. I firmly believe that the raw milk needs to go out labeled. I think it should be labeled with all the risks that that have been cited before you today. And I also would recommend that if people wanted to pasteurize or partially pasteurize milk themselves, the instructions for that could be included on the label, because it's not a high-tech process. I really think that we will not see new startups in the dairy industry up here until we open new niches, and this is one of the big ones that that's waiting to happen. And I would really support this legislation or something like it happening. I guess one concern I would have, and back when I was the director, what I suggested bringing forward was a requirement that the sales be limited to direct sales. If there were an outbreak, it would be a lot easier to track, and I think the farmers involved in direct sales of raw milk should be required to keep a customer list and be able to track those customers for a year after the sales. That's been done in other states quite successfully. I think all farmers are quite aware that they bear the liability on this and carry the appropriate liability insurance that's required for most of our products. I guess I'll limit my comments to that, and it's good to talk to you, Mr. Gatto.
Good to hear from you. Next, I'll go to Matsu again. I'm sorry. Before you leave, Larry, Representative Seaton has a question.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. And do you know what how available the liability insurance is for raw milk products, and about what that runs compared to average regular dairy insurance?
I could not answer the specifics on that. I'm sure there would be some differential if raw milk was in the picture, but I'm not sure it would be significant. I know we have to carry $2 million per incident just to be able to sell an unprocessed carrot in a store. So it's whether the raw milk component would change that a lot, I don't know. It didn't when we started selling meat and processing meat. It didn't make a difference on our insurance policy. You'd have to talk to an agent on that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. Rick Williams, are you there too?
Yes, sir.
Could you go ahead with your first identify yourself, your affiliation, and then your testimony?
My name is Rick Williams. I live in the Matsu Borough. I live down at Kinnick Road. Currently have a farm down there. My affiliation is with myself, I would guess. I will read what I've written, and then I'd like to make some other statements. But thanks, Mark Newman, for getting this bill sponsored, and hopefully we'll change the law that really, I feel, doesn't have any business in this state because of where we're located. By giving the people of Alaska the right to choose where we buy our fresh milk and produce, we'll actually create new agriculture and a greater self-reliance for our state. We'd like for you to vote in favor of this bill just to give us the right to choose, you know, what we feed our families and our children. And on a side note, I've been drinking raw milk almost all my life, and recently in the last 6 years got back into it again, and haven't had a cold or a flu nor a flu shot. And I'm not a kid anymore, so every year they come up with a flu shot thing. I always think about it, but I never get one. Some of the other issues you were talking about earlier through some of the other people totally against this, we have documented 4 people dying from pasteurized milk in Massachusetts. That's a fact. We can't find a documented case. There may be one, but we can't find a documented case anywhere of someone dying from raw milk. and we may be able to find one if we dig back pretty far. But as far as that, my comments are basically looking for a right to choose here. Most of the people that come to the farm wanting fresh milk or cheese already know that what they're getting into. I mean, it's not an issue with them. They don't even think twice about it because they're already educated. I think we're maybe getting a little too in-depth here with our studies through the CDC, the FDA, the USDA. As far as their comments are concerned, most of their stuff comes from the lower 48. This is an Alaskan issue. Basically, we're unconnected from them down there other than by law. So I would be open to any questions you have. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Williams? I do have, looks like a letter you wrote, or if you didn't write it, please support this bill. Is that something we receive from you?
Yes, sir. I would guess that would probably be from me.
Okay. Because we have a stack of things that we've received generally in support. So thanks very much for your testimony. Next, I want to go to Heather Fair. Heather, are you online? Heather Fair.
Yes, I'm here.
Heather, please introduce yourself, affiliation, and then your testimony.
My name is Heather Fair. I live in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, and I have recently become an owner of dairy goats, which I milk for my own personal consumption, dating back to October 2007. I would just like to state that it was not a decision I entered into lightly. I've researched this for about 11 years now for my own personal health, which has been failing through more traditional means, and looking for an opportunity to get closer to my food supply. In addition to goats, I have chickens, and I use them for eggs and meat. I have turkeys and ducks and so forth, other livestock. I'm by no means a commercial farmer, however. And I support House Bill 367 to legalize the sale of raw milk in Alaska. I just have a few points here that I think I have addressed for the most part in email conversation directed to Dr. Gerlach and CC to the committee members here. And I hope that you have those in front of you or have had a chance to review those in the past. It has taken place over the last month or two with regard to the most recent correspondence. And some of the things that are important to me, first I'd like to say I echo Rick Williams' thoughts in totality. He is well-versed in the benefits and the risks of raw milk, and I think he presents a very concise support for the bill. And Representative Newman also addressed some wonderful statistics with regard to the putting things into perspective for the risks of raw milk versus pasteurized milk or all the other food products that we sell. And I guess I am confused by Dr. McLaughlin's statement that we shouldn't compare raw milk to other foodstuffs. But in Alaska, as far as I know, that is the only raw food that is illegal to sell in any way in its raw state. So that's something to put into perspective. And just to reiterate some points that I provided to you from the Weston A. Price Foundation, who is a large component for what they call real milk or raw milk, they talk about between 1990 and 2004, there were just numerous illnesses from produce, poultry, beef, eggs, and seafood, totaling over roughly 100,000 cases. And none of those were attributed to raw milk. There are over 9.2 million cases of foodborne illnesses annually in the United States, estimated, from Campylobacter, Salmonella, E. coli, these sorts of things. But what I find most important, if you want to compare pasteurized to raw milk, is that pasteurized milk, according to the Weston A. Price Foundation, has been the source of many widespread outbreaks, totaling the total documented outbreaks due to pasteurized milk over the past two decades has been almost 240,000 cases and 620 deaths from pasteurized milk, which we're supposed to trust more than raw milk. And so that's something I wanted to bring out. And so one of the things that the Weston A. Price Foundation tells us is that from their studies as nutritionists and people in the industry throughout the United States and certainly throughout the world, that pasteurization is something that we've come to rely on and take for granted the safety of the milk, whether it really is safe. And it destroys the probiotics or the good bacteria, so that any harmful bacteria that becomes present in the milk after the pasteurization process, it can flourish. It has nothing to fight against it. So by pasteurizing it, we destroy those natural defenses for ourselves and for the milk itself. And I think that's an important point. There were some references to the Stump Acres incident. The information I have actually disputes that they ever found any human pathogens in the milk. But they did close the dairy trying to find those pathogens and were unsuccessful, and that's why they reopened them. And it goes on and on. The CDC and the FDA are longstanding opponents to raw milk, and they have been very pro-pasteurization pretty much since its onset. And, you know, there's many reasons why that may be, and I won't get into the political arguments of it with regard to the dairy lobby, but as far as the pasteurized dairy, but there's many things there that could be the case. And I do appreciate some of the comments made earlier by some of the other testimony that despite the opposition from the health departments of the majority of the United States, 28 states actually allowing raw milk, now excluding Alaska, of course, they made that decision in spite of the health department's claims against the milk and the safety of the milk. So just to summarize, I don't think it's in anyone's best interest to run a dirty dairy or to create a product that makes their consumers sick. So it's not something that anyone wants. And I think that most responsible people, which I think most farmers are consuming the products for themselves and their family and entrust that safety for themselves and pass it on to the consumers, both for their own health and for their own liability concerns. So it's kind of counterproductive to produce a product that makes people sick, and certainly they wouldn't be in business for very long if we had a good accountability of that. So, again, I just want to reiterate that I do support House Bill 367, and I welcome any questions.
And thanks very much, Heather, for your testimony. I see that you did send us a letter. We have it in our packet. It's under the green tab that indicates support, and you're the owner of the name of the dairy is...
Actually, I own a small farm called All I Saw Farm in Wasilla, and my herd of Nigerian dwarf dairy goats is registered name is Fair Skies. Well, it's very small. I currently only own six goats.
Six Nigerian dwarf dairy goats.
That's correct.
I suppose if we visited you, that would be all we've ever seen.
That would be it as of today.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you have questions for Heather? Seeing and hearing none, thank you again for your testimony, Heather. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Want to go to Tiana Heider? Tiana Heider, can you do you hear us? I'll skip over her and go to Suzanne Nevada. Suzanne, can you hear us? Okay, I'm not getting a response. So, Kristen Ryan, did you have a wrap-up for us? Thank you.
For the record, Kristen Ryan, Director for the Division of Environmental Health. I wanted to point out FDA's testimony. I forgot to do that. Director Sheehan had submitted testimony, and he's the Director of the Milk and Egg Safety Division of FDA. Right, so that refutes a lot of the points I think you have in your packets, and that we support what he has to say. A lot of people have said there's a limited amount of outbreaks that have occurred to raw milk, but we believe that is primarily because it's been illegal and not widely distributed. Outbreaks do occur with other food, but we control it as much as we can. For example, chicken, we don't restrict it being sold raw because everyone's eating it cooked, as far as we know, whereas raw milk wouldn't be the case. So every food product is regulated a little differently depending on how it's handled by the consumer.
Okay, questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, sorry. Representative Edgman.
Being from coastal Alaska.
He almost got away.
Being from coastal Alaska, where I've never seen a moose or anything milked, where it might be.
It's real common everywhere.
Yes. Yeah, they're getting so domesticated in Anchorage, that might be a hub for tourism activity here in the future. But so how's the milk actually sold out in the valley if it's on a small scale? It doesn't go through a Cars or doesn't go through a Safeway or anything like that. But and again, back to my original question about the economic development angle of this bill, and I guess there's now 6 dairy farms, the smaller farms as opposed to 7. But how was it actually distributed and sold? And again, trying to get to the amount of economic development that this bill might engender were it to pass.
Oh, Representative Edgman, through the chair. Right now, as you heard, I think, from the first gentleman, there's dairies that have the cows, and then they sell their milk to processors. And Matt May used to be a processor. There's an existing processor up in the North Pole area called Northern Lights that's still operating and buying as much milk as they possibly can. But there's more milk out there than they can buy. And with Matt May closing, we're sort of in a flux while we're waiting for more processors to come online and start buying the milk again that people are producing in the Matt Valley. But we permit the processor and the milk farmer who's selling their milk to the processor. It's a very rigorous process to sell milk just because of the inherent risks and the people drinking it. It's everyone drinks milk, so including children. So right now that's sort of what's happening as people are on hold in the valley. They're selling some milk up to the Northern Lights dairy. They're trucking it up there, but that's not necessarily economical. What you really need is a certified processor in the Mat-Su area to get on board. And as Representative Newman mentioned, one is in the works and trying to happen, but it's we're expecting in, I think, 2 weeks he'll be certified. We're, believe me, waiting on him, you know, right there to get him certified as soon as he's ready.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Edgman.
So this bill would allow then for, as it says at the final, like raw milk means milk that is not pasteurized. So that means it's not processed as well. Is that correct?
That's how we would interpret it. Right now, only milk is allowed to be sold that has been pasteurized. You own a cow, obviously you're drinking, you can do whatever you want. But if it's to be sold to the public, it is to be pasteurized and gone through our certification program. The bill, it does... would allow not only raw milk now to be sold, but to be sold in restaurants and grocery stores. So some of our fiscal note reflects not only just the one new inspector to be out at the farms helping those new dairies make sure that they are following some sort of certification plan that we put together, but to increase our inspections of dairies or restaurants and grocery stores, because they're going to need to make sure they're clearly separating their raw milk and not making mistakes and providing it to people.
So just a final
go ahead, Representative Benjamin.
So then the economic development potential of this bill could be fairly significant then.
Representative Edgman, through the chair, it's difficult for me to say. It will be in competition with processors. It will be in competition with people providing pasteurized milk.
I think it's probably fair to say that if you walk into one of the major chains and you buy milk, it's Seattle milk.
Right now, Mr. Chairman, it definitely, I don't think the Northern Lights dairy gets much product outside of the Fairbanks area, so right now, definitely.
And the old Matt-Made label has truly disappeared from the shelves, so that all of this becomes any milk that we have that would be local milk, and so we have the origin of back to whatever agricultural base we can have in the state. It's become a portion of it. Okay, further questions? Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Ryan, for coming. I don't drink milk, as I mentioned. I think it's actually gross.
Anyway. Thank you for sharing.
And the discussion on this has just made me decided definitely not something I really want to know more about. But I don't think I have a problem with if there's a willing seller and a willing buyer that we get in the way of that. And I had questions about your fiscal note in particular. the $270,000 requested for DEC for inspection and labeling, can you tell me a little bit more about how DEC would monitor compliance of raw milk sellers in order to ensure safety? And I mean, could you, with this amount of money, be able to ensure safety, do you think? That's a question.
Okay, Representative Kawasaki, through the chair. The bill, the fiscal note reflects, as I mentioned previously, different inspectors for different programs. In my division, I not only have the state veterinarian, which the dairy operation is regulated through, but we also have the food safety program. So it would be a food safety inspector that would be viewing the end of market end of things. And then we'd have an additional dairy inspector to go out and work with the farms to make sure they're following standards in our regulations for cleanliness and testing and maintenance of the herd in the safest way possible. But all that would have to be developed in regulation. Our best guess is if it is only the six primarily goat farms we're hearing from right now on the road system, one inspector could probably handle it. The third person that we included in the fiscal note is for the laboratory. Our environmental health laboratory is the certified lab by FDA to test milk for somatic cell counts and antibiotics, bacteria, everything you look for in milk to make sure things are going all right. So that's why the fiscal note will reflect all those three different areas of our regulation of the sale of it. But as I mentioned earlier, when we look at what other states are doing, and I do have a list of that California recently did a survey of all the states and who is allowing this and how they're allowing it and how they're regulating it, they're still finding outbreaks. For example, California, who did the survey, just had an outbreak from raw milk and are now evaluating their legal aspects of allowing the sale of this product that permanently damages child. But so we're not seeing a program, you know, I don't know if we can effectively say we could do it safely, but that is a policy decision up to the legislature if they want to go that route. But our public health perspective is that raw milk is just unable to be sold in a manner that's as safe as our other products.
Okay. And then a follow-up on the
follow-up, Representative Kawasaki.
This is all general fund request. Is there an idea that it might be a receipts receipt-supported service, or could it be?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, that's obviously at the will of the legislature, how they want to fund this effort. For your edification, in the past, it's been pretty controversial who gets free services from us and who doesn't. And, for example, shellfish farmers, I'm sure, would be very frustrated if their testing they had to pay for and the milk people didn't. But historically, the dairy farmers have gotten free testing. So, but it would be up to the legislature as our position to decide how the funding would occur. We just put it in general fund at this moment to start the discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I just have one question. The one person that's, I assume, is testing the pasteurized dairy milk, why couldn't that person just do the extras? Is that going to be that much more that you'd have to get another person?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, it's, you know, we're assuming so. It's very difficult to know how much work would be involved with, since we'd have to develop regulations that they'd have to comply with and how much work it would be to help them. But historically, dairy farmers have needed quite a bit of support and oversight and technical assistance to stay in compliance. So that was our assumption.
I'm out in the lab is what I was talking about.
Oh, Representative Wilson, to Tara, yes, because we modeled our approach on how we regulate the pasteurized milk farms. They have to have a lab on site to be testing daily, it's sampling their batches, and we certify that lab to make sure it's doing it right. So not only are we collecting samples on a monthly basis to go out and double check, we also are certifying their facility to be doing the fecal coliform counts on site so that there's even, you know, daily checks.
We're running slightly over time now, and I have some people who had some technical problems getting through, so I'll hold the bill until our next meeting. And with that, unless right. Representative Seaton wants to get something in quick.
Just with Kristen, we had testimony, I think, from the sponsor that 4/10 of the U.S. foodborne pathogen or outbreaks were from raw milk. Do you have any idea, in the food supply, do you have any comparative data of how much of the food supply raw milk represents compared to the total food sales of raw products?
Representative Seaton, good question. And that's our first question when we see that statistic is, well, obviously raw milk is illegal in most of the U.S., so the number would be extremely low, and we would expect it to increase if raw milk sales increased. But I would have to, I'll have to do some digging and see if I can get back to you about the percentage.
Thank you.
Resources is adjourned. Thank you very much.